presentation of Grace Church in Greenville, South Carolina. You're listening to our Courageously Generous series entitled Fear and Freedom. For more information, please visit our website at gracechurchsc.org.
All right, good morning. Grab your Bibles and turn to Matthew chapter 6. We know we have some visitors, and so if you don't have a Bible with you, there's one in the seats in front of you. And you can take it with you because it is worn out. We were looking at them last week. They're all ratty. So you can have that one and we'll buy some more. Or we can go to my house and get all the ones my kids have stolen. Bring them back. Matthew chapter 6. We're launching a new series. So let's start with this. We're recovering from what's become classic to say the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. All right? Economic downturn, and it has exposed some things in our culture. And so we talked about doing this series last year, and we thought, you know what? Let's get through this a little more, and let's see what is left. Okay, culturally, corporately, as a country, as a culture, and then for us individually, we've been exposed. And some of us are feeling so much better because things are so much better than they were a year ago. Right. But then there's others. I talked to two businessmen this week. One is the manager on his site for his whole operation. And the other one is the owner of his business. And I said, how's business? They said, not good. And I said, well, you see any light at the end of the tunnel? They're like, not really. And so, I mean, yeah, like 3 to 5 years, but not like the summer, like what everybody's thinking. And employment will pick back up and we'll be good in the summer. And so that's a tough place to be, isn't it? When, especially as the, you know, it's hard enough when you're getting laid off, but if you're the boss and you're having to lay people off and you're living with that tension, here's what we're seeing: some things that have been exposed in our culture and in us individually that are difficult to process. We had banks lending money to people that they knew could not afford those loans, right? So then it all goes south, and so then the banks cut everybody loose, and now if you need a loan, the only people who can get a loan now are people who don't need a loan. Right. You have to be so qualified. You have to have so much that you don't actually need that loan. And so the banks have been in a unique position to be able to make all this money off of people by lending them, giving them loans that they didn't, you know, that they couldn't afford. And now gotten some bailout from the government. And now they can just say, oh, well, we're not doing that anymore. So they won then. And now they're winning again. And for a lot of folks that you follow that really bothers you. And there's a lot of us going, it's hard to believe that big business could be that difficult because we want to think the best about our country and our culture. But some things are being exposed. And with us individually, we found out, you know what? There's a bunch of us. We've been living beyond our means. We've been making business deals with some pride and presumption and arrogance that we didn't realize that we had. We just thought, well, I'll buy this and then I'll flip it in 6 months. Obviously, it's going to sell. And then we find out, well, it's not going to sell. And so there's been some pride and some arrogance in us that we were living in a way that was not sustainable. My grandmother, my mom's mom, I called her Nanny, went through the Great Depression. And so she, coming through the 30s, worked 2 and 3 jobs to pay 7 years back taxes on the farm so that the farm would not be taken away from our family. And so I had to listen to the story. I called it the lecture 1,000 times. Of what it was like to grow up in the Great Depression and what it was like to work to pay 7 years back taxes on the property. And so like when my siblings hear this podcast, they will burst out laughing when they hear the word 7 years back taxes. Because we heard that so many times growing up. And here's what she would say to me. She would say, I know that, you know, you're going to get older and everybody wants to put money in the stock market. But here's the thing. Don't do that because you can't trust it. Only put money in what? She's 80, right? Land. Because land always appreciates. You can never lose money on land. Was she right? Up until this last year, she was. I mean, she is rolling over going, oh. So it is a new world, right? We bought land. You bought stock on credit in the 20s and 30s, and then it all fell apart. And then we bought land on credit, and then it all fell apart, right? So it is a new world and time to talk about some things and think about some things and deal with some things corporately, but more importantly, individually. So we're going to talk about some personal finance. Now, hear me on this. We're not asking our body to take their resources and bring them to the church to help the church. That's not what we're doing for the next 6 weeks. We're taking the resources of the church and bringing them to the body and saying, we need to help you. Okay? So there's nothing being taken from you. You're going to bring your resources here to help the church. That's not what we're doing. We're too broken for that. The church is healthy financially, but our body is not healthy financially. And we need to deal with on a heart level why that is and what does it take for us to move forward. So that's what the next few weeks are about. All right, let's look at Matthew 6, verse 19. Before we deal with 19, look at verse 22 and 23. I'm going to read this and then we'll come back and put it in context. Because out of context, it's a little bewildering. 22, your eye is a lamp, verse 22, Matthew 6, that provides light for your body. When your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light. But when your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. And if the light that you think you have is actually darkness, how deep is the darkness? And you're going, what is he talking about? I mean, that's the way you feel. You're like, well, I mean, what? We don't even know what he's talking about. Well, let's look at this. Look in verse 19. Don't store for yourself treasures on earth, but store up treasures in heaven. He's talking about money. Then go to 24. No one can serve two masters, for he will hate the one and love the other. You cannot serve God and money. So the verses before this, he's talking about money. The verses after this, he's talking about money. So right here in the middle, he's talking about this eye, lamp, good, see, bad, darkness. That's about money also. And that's where we want to camp in just a second. So let's start in 19. We'll put it in context. Don't store treasures on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, where thieves break in and steal them. Because everything that you got for Christmas and that your children got will one day be in the landfill. I just got a brand new reciprocating saw. It is glorious. It is wonderful. It is beautiful. And the thought of it being thrown into a landfill and them taking the dump truck and just boom, just beating it down. Well, that's horrible. But that is the reality, that all our new toys, all our stuff will one day be in the landfill. And he says, so nothing wrong with being rich here, but make sure that being rich here doesn't prevent you from being rich somewhere else. Verse 20, store up treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. There's something more eternal than what you're seeing at, what you're touching, what you're feeling right now. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also. And he makes this interesting discipleship point that we tend to think that I put my resources, let's say my time and my money, into things that I care about. I mean, that's true, but that's not what Jesus says. He says the opposite is what's really true, is that where I put my resources, my time and my money, that's where my heart is. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So if I spend 6 months trying to work a deal to sell this product and we get down to the end and it falls apart, I'm heartbroken. Why? Because I poured my treasure, my time into the deal and now it fell apart. If it just popped up and someone said, hey, you want to do this? Well, yeah, let's do that. And then, oh, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. Then you wouldn't be as heartbroken because you haven't put your treasure into it. So wherever you put your money, that's where your heart will be. So if you put your money over here, heart's going to be over here. Put money over here. You say, well, I don't really want to put money over here because my heart's not there. When my heart gets there, that won't happen. Put my money here or my time here. My heart will follow that. That's Jesus's idea. We'll come back to it. 23. But when your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. I'm sorry. 22. All right. Back up. Forget I said that. 22. Your eye is a lamp that provides light for your body. I was like, good gracious, what's he talking about? Your eye is a lamp that provides light for your body. Okay, simple idea. And when your eye is good, your whole body is filled with light. He says, here's the idea. On a physical level, this eye provides direction for the rest of your body. So like now that I'm older, you get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. It used to. Remember there was a time when you slept through the night? Wonder what happened to those days. All right, so don't do that anymore, right? So now, don't sleep through the night. So I have to make sure there's a clear path between my bed and the bathroom before I go to sleep. Because if you kick Barbie's house in the middle of the night with bare feet, you would think plastic, light. No. It will dislocate a toe just that fast. Right? So when it's dark and the eyes filled with darkness, then the whole body is in danger. So he says, if the eye is the lamp of the body, when the eye is good, then you can see everything's good. All right, 23. But when your eye is bad, your whole body is filled with darkness. So when it's dark, that's what you run into. And if the light that you think you have is actually darkness, how deep is the darkness? Now remember, what's the context? The verses before are about money. The verses after about money, he's already said where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Heart belongs to God. Treasure is tied to heart. So heart is a God issue. Treasure's tied to heart. So treasure is a God issue. So this is a discipleship issue. And if the light that you think you have is actually darkness, how deep is the darkness? Think through it for just a moment. If my eye equates is my eye leads my body in the same way that my soul leads my life. Now we're on to something. Eye leads the body, soul leads the life. So it's the eye of my soul. And he says, whatever the eye of your soul is fixated on, that's what you'll wrap your life around. And if that's good and clear, you'll wrap your life around good things. If it's not good and clear, you're just going to create some division in your life and some real problems. So if I'm focused, if my soul, the eye of my soul is focused on this new car or this house or this job or this 401k, then nothing wrong with any of those things. You don't hear him condemning any of that. But when your life's your soul is focused on that, then your life gets wrapped around it is the idea. And then he asked this really, really difficult question. It's not a question for him, it's a statement. We turn it into a question. And if the light that you think you have is actually darkness, how great is the darkness? He goes, and it's even worse. And we'll look at it in just a minute. Why? If you get self-deceived into thinking that you see clearly, but you don't see clearly, that's even worse than if you knew you didn't see clearly. And so you think you see clearly, but you don't. You're even in more danger. How great is the darkness? Here's how great the darkness is, culturally speaking. Show you this slide from Africa. What is this? These are people trying to get what? Food. So these guys have gotten up early in the morning to go get food for themselves. But most of them are probably not getting food for themselves. They're getting food for themselves and their family. So it's just disconcerting enough to know I got to get up and walk a mile or 5 miles to get food for me. But if I'm not going to be able to sleep thinking about the fact that I have girls, that I have a son who needs food, and I got to go get food for them. And so I'm going to get up and I want to be the first one there, because what if I walked all the way there and then they ran out? How desperate I feel now. But if I get there and they run out, how desperate I'm going to feel. Next slide. Black Friday. Bunch of white people trying to get what? DVD players. If you look at this, you're like, well, God, are they starving? I mean, what are they trying to get? Here's the, and I got, listen, I got no problem with Black Friday. I got no problem with you getting up at 3 a.m. to go get a DVD player, right? But we gotta ask ourselves this honest question. Why do we look like we're starving? We are the wealthiest nation that has ever existed. We have more stuff than anybody. Why do we act like we don't have any stuff? Why do we act like we need stuff so badly? Why are we consumed with getting more stuff? I mean, if this were in South America or Africa and people did that, I'd be like, well, sure, because they ain't got no stuff. Yeah, they got to wait in line. Yeah, they're going to get up in the middle of the night and get some stuff. But this is a great sale. But for us, it just is weird to me that we look like we're starving. That's what we look like. And the reality is we are. And I'll explain to you why by the time we get to the end. All right, so we're picking on America. How, you know, goodness, America's down the tubes. All right, well, let's talk about this for us as a church body, not America, not other churches, not Southside, not Brookwood, not New Spring, but just us. OK, Grace Church. There's this thing called consumer debt, right? Consumer debt is not your mortgage, but it's what you've put on credit cards to go to Disney World. It's school loans. It's a car loan. It's the new couch from Rooms to Go. That's consumer debt. Average family, it's about $40,000 in debt on consumer debt. Half of that's credit cards. We estimate, using national numbers, we brought them and put them against our body, people who attend Grace. And then we did some research internally within Grace. And here's what we think, conservatively. We think we have about $35 million in consumer debt for our church. Not Greenville, not crazy America, just Grace Church. $35 million in consumer debt. When Jesus says, well, how great is the darkness? Apparently, it's pretty great. When he says, how great is the darkness? And especially the darkness will be so great if you think you don't have darkness, how much greater that darkness will be. Well, yep, that's a pretty good point, Jesus. As it turns out, 2,000 years ago, you're speaking our language. I mean, you have to imagine there have been people throughout history who read this and were like, I don't know that this really applies to us. This may have just been written for us, right? We have folks who are in conflict in their marriage every day or every two or three days because of the financial stress that they are under. I mean, every two or three days, they're in a heated discussion about the financial stress that they face. Not out there, right? Like us, right here. It's a reality. We have men who will not live as long as they should because of the burden and the stress and the pressure that they carry right now because of their debt load. We have folks who are laying in bed at night, staring at the ceiling at 3 o'clock, thinking, how in the world am I going to get us out of this? What are we going to do about this? How can I solve this? And carrying that load all the time. Well, here's what he says. Go back to 22. When your eye is good, the Greek word there means single, singular, not double. And so it becomes a word play between that and then what we see in verse 24. No one can serve two masters. A single eye doesn't try to serve two masters, but we're functioning with a bad eye or a double vision, looking in two directions. So in 24, no one can serve two masters, but you'd be self-deceived into thinking that you can. For you will hate the one and you will love the other. In other words, you will choose one above the other. You will be devoted to one and you will despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now, is that the word that you would have picked? You cannot serve God and Satan. Because that would be the opposite, right? You can't serve God and Satan. That would be a better phrase. Or you can't serve God and yourself. That's almost the opposite. Or you can't serve God and sex. I mean, can you do better? But he says no, because nothing is tied to the heart like money. He says, so you cannot serve God and money. That is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life. Whether you have enough food or drink or clothes to wear, isn't life more than food and the body more than clothing? And here's the thing. Most of us are not even worried about food and clothing. We're worried about other stuff that's less core, less fundamental. And so if we go to the other parts of the world, they say, well, what are you worried about? Well, I'm worried about not having the newest car. They would be like, I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry. Huh? Can you tell me that again? I'm worried about beans and rice today. And you're worried about what? And Jesus is saying these things that are very core, don't worry about those. Even more so, the point would be for us and some of the things that we're worried about. He says, look at the birds in 26. They don't plant or harvest, yet I provide for them. All this worry can it add a single moment. He says, you're focused on the wrong thing. You're trying to serve two masters. And we're going to have to begin looking at how we're living to discern and get real clear about who we're really serving. Because automatically, if you ask me, Matt, who are you serving? I'm serving God. You serving money? No, I serve God. But I might be self-deceived in that moment. And I might really be serving something that I don't think I am. That's why the warning is here. And so here's what we would say. This is a huge discipleship issue. So if someone says, you know what? I mean, I just don't know that we should be talking about this in church. I don't want to talk about money. I mean, money is offensive. Personal finance, you've dressed it up. You should just say money. You're talking about our money and you call it personal finance. I mean, I just don't, any of this, it's too awkward. I don't think we should talk about it. Let me just say, Jesus talks about money more than anything else. He talks about money as much as he talks about judgment. You take all the other topics that he talks about besides judgment and you pull them together. He talks about money more than he talks about all those together. And the reason is because it's a discipleship issue. Where your heart is, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. He's connected to my heart. Treasure's connected to my heart, so he's connected to treasure. So it's a big deal. So if we said, I can't forgive my wife, but I'm going to follow Jesus. We would say, you're not following Jesus. She says, you know what? I don't care anything about God's word. I mean, it's nice and all, but I mean, I'll evaluate God's word. I'm not going to put myself underneath its authority, but I'm following Jesus. We would say, not really. You can't ignore God's word and say you're following Jesus. Well, I don't want to be a part of community. I'm not going to be involved in community. I'm not going to put my life in connection to other people, but I'm following Jesus. We would say, no, you're not. I got all this immorality in my life. I'm looking at pornography, but I'm following Jesus. We would say, no, you're not. So if someone says, I mean, there's something wrong in my finances. It's broken. And I don't put it before God and I don't submit it to his lordship, but I'm following Jesus. Then we have to say, no, you're not. Because Jesus speaks to all the other issues clearly in their discipleship issues. He speaks to this one and it's a discipleship issue too. Right? It is tied to the heart and we cannot escape that. Here's what we're saying is that something is wrong. And so you may say, you got anything tangible here? Let me give you something tangible. How would I know something's wrong? If if you spend more than you make, something's wrong. All right? If you don't know if you spend more than you make, something's wrong. Right? So if you spend more than you make, something's wrong. If you don't know, and then here's the other one. If you don't care, okay? I don't think I care. If you don't care that you spend more than you make, then something's wrong, all right? If you're asking yourself at the end of the month, I mean, where did all that money go? I mean, I don't make the most, but I don't make the least either. So where did all the money go that we had this month? And here's the thing. If there's anything that's under our power, that's it. Because we know exactly how much is coming in, and we're making decisions about the fact that it's leaving. I mean, there are some things that leave, and we know they got to go. I mean, Duke Power is going to get their piece. So mortgage is going to. So we know that, so we can write those down and add those up. So that's clear. And then the rest of it, we're having to manage and figure out. So we got to figure that part out. But we know how much is coming in, and we know how much is leaving. So if we say, I mean, where did all that go? What happened? There's something wrong. So if we don't know where it's going, we know we're spending more than we make, or we don't know, or we don't care, something's definitely wrong. If we're in debt, and we've been carrying it, and aren't moving out. So when someone comes in and goes, hey man, I mean, things are clicking along, paying the minimums on my credit card. But bro, that we're not getting out. You're always going to be there. You're always going to, if that's what you're doing, something's wrong. You're always going to be there. You'll never get out of that. If you're having to deceive your spouse with something to do with finances, something's wrong. If you're having to deceive the IRS, something's really wrong, right? You're misrepresenting yourself to your friends. Here's one. If all your money is designated for yourself, something's wrong. Because God never intended that everything he sends your way is for you. There's no way in the scriptures you can support that idea. That everything he sends your way is for you. That from Genesis, Old Testament, all the way through the New Testament. That is a foundational idea. That he does not send everything to you for you. He only sends everything to you. Only a portion of that is meant for you. It's not all meant for you. So if everything's on you, something's wrong. And here's another one that you wouldn't think of. If you cannot enjoy money, something's wrong. I mean, if you can't go buy some fireworks on New Year's Eve and enjoy that with your kids because you feel so guilt-ridden about where that money should be going or whatever, however you would just blow it. If you can't, because in 1 Timothy, it is there to enjoy. If you can't enjoy money, then there's a problem. And here's what the problem is. Jesus has an answer for what this problem is. Something is wrong. And he would say that we are greedy. And the problem with greed is it is so difficult to self-identify. Luke 12, you don't have to turn here. Luke 12, verse 15. And then Jesus said, beware, like pay attention. Pay attention. Guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured in how much you own. And it's almost like, be careful, this is so deceptive. It's not like adultery. Oh my goodness, be careful, watch out. What happened? She's laying here next to me. What happened? That doesn't happen because you know what happened. But greed is not like that. Greed is something that's frog in the kettle. You get sucked into, you get brought into, because what are we doing? We're not comparing ourselves to some kind of absolute standard, which is about impossible. We're comparing ourselves to everybody else around us. So I just need to not be as selfish and self-focused and greedy as one other person to feel good about myself. All I have to do is beat out somebody, which in our culture is not hard. I can be better than somebody. And I got him labeled. I got him in my head right now. I'm not him. You should see what he did last Christmas. You should see where they go on vacation. I don't do that. And so he says, beware. Guard against every kind of greed because it sneaks up on you. And here's why it's so difficult. Life is not measured in how much you own, but your instincts say that it is. And that's why we look like a group of starving people outside Walmart. Why? Because we are starving. Because we think that new stereo, that new DVD player, the Blu-ray player, that it can fill a place in my life that only God can fill. So the reality is it's not a physical starvation. It's an emotional, spiritual starvation. We're rejecting the life that God gives, and we're trying to get life from something else. So when we crowd around the building, not everybody, but as a culture, when we crowd around the building, we are starving. We're trying to feed our souls with more stuff. And just because I can compare myself to someone else who's more reckless, more selfish, more self-focused than I am, that does not free me up from being aware and guarding against every kind of greed. Because the human heart will fill itself with something. And he says, life is not measured, or you don't have value by how much stuff you own. But we intuitively feel like we are valuable because of our stuff. We intuitively feel that way. It's part of the fallen nature. And so we make stuff, whether it's the security of a bank account or whether it's the new this or one of those, that they have it, I'm getting one too. Whatever it is, we make that into an idol, and we're using it for something. So here's the thing. We're going to have to self-indict, and we're going to have to ask God to do what only he can do. And at the same time, we want to create some freedom within our body to be able to explore this. So when I was 22 years old, I got married after my junior year at Clemson, finished my senior year, was headed to seminary. In the spring of my senior year, I got addicted to reading. And so I would read. I would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning before school. I was finishing my last semester, and I would read. I was a voracious reader. I would read for 2 hours before school, and I was reading every night for about 2 hours. I was starving to learn. And so I ran up about $500 on a credit card to buy books. And so we were headed to seminary with $500. You're like, well, that's really not that much. Well, to me, for what Vicky was making and what we didn't even have jobs at that point, it was all the money in the world. It could have been $500,000 is the way it felt to me. So when I started seminary, I was going to have to pay for all that. So we were all working, trying to get it done. And I asked my dad, I said, Dad, I ran up this credit card deal for $500 and most of it's books. Would you pay that off? So I'm going to seminary, then you could just focus on paying off school since they weren't helping with any of that. And he said, no. He said, what you need to do is get you 2 or 3 jobs, whatever you got to do, and pay that off. And as you're paying that off, feel the pain of that and don't ever let yourself get back in this position again. He goes, learn this lesson now, and then you don't have to learn it again. And that has been true, is that I learned a hard lesson in that first semester, and we worked and we paid that off. And then we have never gone back into that again. And we use credit cards, but we pay them off every month. So we have not had that kind of consumer debt hanging over us. And so that's always felt good. But it's also kept me from understanding some of the pain that people are going through until last year. And I violated, and you've heard part of the story, I violated cardinal rule. Bought a house without selling a house because I'm so smart. I figure it out. I got a plan, I got a strategy, and then the world falls apart and I can't get rid of anything. Even the new house. I talked to the guy, I was like, you want this back? He was like, no, I don't. It's yours. I'm like, okay, thanks. And I know what it feels like to stare at the ceiling at 3 o'clock in the morning and think, tomorrow I will do whatever I have to do to get us out of this. And tomorrow comes and you can't do anything about it. I know what it's like to be in a heated, angry conversation with your wife. Oh, and it's simply because you're just frazzled and at the end of everything of trying to figure out what we're going to do about this. I know what that feels like. I know the shame and the embarrassment that comes with making a poor financial decision. And part of you wants people to ask about it and care about you. And the other part of you doesn't want anybody to know. Let's don't talk about it because you don't even know what to say anymore. You just want it to go away, but it won't go away. And here's what I'm telling you. My heart breaks for our body when I think of $30 to $40 million of consumer debt in our body. That breaks my heart because I know that some of you are carrying huge weight, that tomorrow morning you will head to work and you will feel futile in your work because you will work all day long and not feel like you're getting any closer to getting out of that. And here's what I want to tell you. There is hope. There is hope in this. Is that we as a church want to help. And we're going to begin to articulate a plan and some opportunities for you to find some help in the next few weeks, not to resolve it in 6 weeks, to begin a process over the next 6 weeks where you can find a light at the end of the tunnel, a path forward where you can begin to make some of the difficult really difficult, challenging decisions so that the next 10, 20 years of your life do not look like the last 10 or 20 years of your life. And so I'm offering to you hope that things can be different, and we want to help it be different. And that's really, really important. And we think it's one of the most crucial, important aspects of what's going on in our church life right now, which is why we're talking about it. But we don't want you to feel overwhelmed and more condemnation. But here's what we do need to do. We need to clearly indict ourselves. We need to be honest with our spouse, honest with our friends, honest in community group. Here's where I am. You don't have to tell everybody your deal. I'm not saying that. But you got to tell somebody, and then we will start working on a plan to help us move forward. But at first, we got to be honest about what's going on in our souls with all this. The two words you're going to hear are fear and freedom. And when we talk about fear, we're talking about fear that my future is not secure, not enough money to retire, can't pay for my kids' college, that I'll not have enough stuff, that I'll miss out on some experience that my friends get, that my value is tied to my stuff. I don't have enough stuff. I don't have any value. Freedom. Freedom from the constant worry about this debt that we carry. Freedom from worrying about the future, the financial issues that come up within marriage. Freedom to be able to take a less stressful job, which means a little bit less money. But then I don't have to travel so much, not as much stress. Free from being envious of what other people have. Freedom to be able to be generous and obedient to what God calls me to do. Freedom to enjoy money, to go back to school, to go on a mission trip. Who knows, right? Some freedom. But it means we gotta say this. We gotta say, I gotta take a long, hard look at something. I gotta look at my soul. What's going on there? Am I really ready to make some decisions? We have a video, Clay and Cindy, he's going to talk about what it means to take a long, hard look. Some of this, you'll hear some language called FPU, Financial Peace University, Dave Ramsey's deal. Don't worry about that yet. Just hear the heart of this couple having to come to terms with where they were and what it meant for them to move forward. So let's take a moment. Look at this.
Typically, the way that I handled money was I got paid on Friday, I'd go to the bank, and I'd put my check in the bank, and felt like my responsibility was taken care of. I'd keep whatever pocket money I was going to keep and leave it up to Cindy from there, and it was for her to deal with, and we didn't talk about it. I just knew it was being taken care of. Wasn't biblical, and certainly wasn't a good thing to do to your wife, but we've lived that way for 14 years, and it seemed to work, so we just kept doing it until we went to FPU.
I have always worked and always budgeted. I mean, it's like to the point that Clay would say, do you have to look at the checkbook every day, every week? But I was that way. I always had to look at it constantly and check it out, make sure we were on track. And
the biggest thing was accepting my responsibility as God has put it out for us to be involved in our finances. Just bringing my paycheck home was not enough. And I know an awful lot of guys do that, but that's really not biblical.
Once we started learning how to budget together and getting us both on board, it was basically I had to just make myself not look at it every day or every week. It was once we did it, because I only got paid once a month, once we did it, we just stayed on track from that point. What we both agreed on is what we did.
I guess probably the biggest thing that I had to learn out of FPU is get rid of stuff and pay down your debt. Get rid of your toys and your junk and that sort of thing. I had to sell a few things that I did not want to sell. A lot of stuff I didn't care. I had a four-wheeler that I had to sell, and that was an eye-opener. That four-wheeler had become something of an idol or a god or whatever word you want to put to it, but that one was tough. I had to take a long, hard look at what my material possessions really meant to me, and That was an eye-opener.
I realized that I had a control issue with money, and I learned to let go and allow Clay to be the leader.
We're extremely glad that we went to Financial Peace University. It has had a huge impact on our lives. It's changed our lives. It's changed our marriage. We had a good marriage before. If anything, it's great now. Just it's been huge. It's made a huge impact on us.
And see, here's the thing. We all got options. Ain't nothing wrong with having a four-wheeler. I mean, that's a big dream of mine one day, right? But what Clay can do is Clay can say, well, my friend's got two four-wheelers. I'm just keeping one. We're all in that place. But when we start thinking about whether I have this or don't have this, what does it mean to me? That's the question. What does my stuff mean to me? And am I trying to serve two masters if I elevated it to a place of God and that I won't let go? And so that's what's keeping me from living in freedom. Those are the kind of questions that we have to ask. Let me show you this verse. You don't have to turn it, from Jeremiah 2. God asked this question. These are God's words. Has any nation ever traded its gods for new ones, even though they were not gods at all? Who trades real gods for false gods? Yet my people have exchanged the one true, glorious God for worthless idols. The God who gives rain for idols who cannot give rain. The God who created stuff for idols who are created. The God who provides stuff for idols who can't provide anything. You have to provide for them. You carry them into slavery. 13, for my people have done two evil things. They have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, the provision for everything, and they have dug for themselves cracked cisterns, a shallow well. They have dug wells for themselves that are cracked that will not hold water. The one who gives water, they have traded for the one who cannot even hold water. And he says, what they've done is they've taken their idols and they've replaced me with their whatever those idols are. And the reality for us is we do the same thing, is that we take things that shouldn't be idols at all, that shouldn't be God, and we make them in the place of God. You're like, I ain't worshiping a DVD player. Well, here's the thing. Here's what you have to ask yourself. Whether it's the security of a huge bank account, a 401k, a college fund, a new house, a new car, whatever it is that you elevate, here's what worship is. It is about trusting. It's about serving. And it's about loving. So you're supposed to love God. Well, you're going to pursue God. Well, if you pursue stuff, you love stuff. You're supposed to trust God. But if you trust in this to provide for you later, and I trust in this account, and I trust in having this stuff because it brings me value, well, then that's an act of worship. So if I love it, I trust it. And if I bow down and sacrifice, you know, I don't bow down to anything. Bow down when you sacrifice for something. I'm sacrificing my wife, my children, my family, time here, this. I'm sacrificing my integrity. So I'm pursuing something. I'm trusting in it. I'm sacrificing to it. All of those are acts of worship. So we wouldn't say, no, I'm not bowing down to that. But in reality, we really are. We're taking things, so we're being sucked into it, because I'm not as bad as she is. So I'm getting sucked into it, and I'm becoming greedy, and I'm elevating my stuff to a place of idolatry, where I'm an idol worshiper. And that's the level we have to start on, and we have to deal with the heart. So the questions you have to ask, I'll pray and we'll be done. Am I honoring Christ and living with the freedom that he intends as a disciple with my personal finance? Am I honoring Christ? Am I living with freedom in the area of personal finance? And then the other one, am I willing to take a long, hard look at my resources and how I spend them? Am I willing to evaluate? You go, what's the plan? We're not talking about the plan yet. What's the action? We're not talking about that yet. Because if we just say, hey, here's a list of things, go do these lists of things, everything will be better. That's not going to, a list is just a list. We got to deal on the heart first so that any changes, any direction, any decision comes from this single person or this family, this couple making decisions together, their hearts being united, all pointed in the same direction, realizing this is our sin. This is what Clay said, this is what my stuff means to me. And I have to acknowledge that and own that. It's an opportunity for confession and repentance. So let's take a few moments. We're going to sing together. We're going to give you an opportunity to meditate. We're going to pray. And you just ask God. Say, God, speak to me. Lead me. Give me direction. Father, we do ask that you give us direction. we are many times self-deceived and unaware. And so, Father, would you do the work that no preacher can do, that maybe no friend can do, that we can't do on our own? Can you reveal our hearts to us? Can you show us what's going on the inside? Can you call us to a place where we can see clearly what our stuff means to us? When we're looking for security or we're looking for status, can you show us that we're using money to pursue those things? And what does it mean to confess that and repent of that and turn away from that? We know that you love us. We want to create a safe place where we can move towards you in this most challenging area and be honest with you and have integrity. It's a discipleship issue. We want to follow you in it. We ask it in Jesus' name.